Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1153. Biopsyop Apocalypse Now, part 13. The Yellow Journalism Peril, part 1. This is being recorded on September 27th of the year 2020. I'm going to interrupt the coverage of the actual SARS-CoV-2 virus and the firm indications that it was, in fact, made in the laboratory, not by the Chinese, although overlapping a project in the WIV, the Wuhan Institute of Virology, but rather by elements associated with our own national security establishment and our medical military-industrial complex. And discuss something that is part and parcel to the context in which COVID-19 has occurred. It is more than a little impressive in a negative fashion how discussion of the virus itself and the plandemic, that's with an L, has failed to note that this is occurring in the middle of a full-spectrum program of covert operations and overt operations against China. And a fundamental element of this is weaponized media coverage of what is going on in China. That includes weaponized media coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic itself. We are going to, in this series, revisit once again events going on in Xinjiang province vis-a-vis the Uyghurs and coverage of that, things going on vis-a-vis Hong Kong, things going on vis-a-vis Tibet, and the elevation of some real freaks into a position of primacy vis-a-vis the media coverage of things Chinese and COVID-19 in particular. And if my use of the term real freaks seems a little extreme, in our next show we'll be talking, among other things, about what, for lack of a better term, could be called vampires against China. More about that in our next show. A guy named Massimo Intravigier, who along with his associate J. Gordon Melton is something of a vampire freak, to coin the term, is one of the go-to people by our media vis-a-vis coverage of China. I talked about both J. Gordon Melton and Massimo Intravigier in For the Record 521. Again, presenting the context in which COVID-19 has occurred, I think it will give us a better grasp of just what is going on, and perhaps some of my discussion of not only that consummately important Whitney Webb article from the last American Vagabond blog, but the information that in fact this virus was developed in a laboratory, and discussion of the gain of function manipulations of coronaviruses and H5N1 flu viruses. This is something that we will undertake after visiting the Yellow Journalism Peril. This is, in fact, the woefully slanted, really not slanted, but weaponized media coverage of Chinese in general, and the plandemic, P-L-A-N-D-E-M-I-C in particular, is a fundamental element of what I have termed the bio-psyop apocalypse. We're going to begin by taking a look at an article from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting's magazine from March 6th of 2020. This article is by Joshua Cho, C-H-O, and it is titled Coronavirus Scare Blends Yellow Peril and Red Scare. Now, as you listen to the presentation of this article. Bear in mind, this is from this past March. And our weaponized media, as shameless as they are, have eaten a generous helping of crow with regard to America's own handling of the virus. I do not believe that it has been mishandled. I think it is being handled just the way it was supposed to be handling. The people getting sick and dying are the people who were intended to be eliminated. The institutions, from public transportation to blue states to cities, are being weakened or potentially destroyed by this, are things that were targeted. We'll talk more about this when we get back into discussion of the virus itself. Once again, however, talking about the weaponized media coverage, not only of the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, but also the panoply of covert operations and overt operations against China, the media coverage is fundamental. Again, from Fairness and Accuracy in Reportings magazine from March 6th of 2020, coronavirus scare blends yellow peril and red scare by Joshua Cho. Before I get into this, a signature element of Joshua Cho's presentation here, and let me stress at the outset, I am probably botching the pronunciation of these doctors' names. There is a Dr. Li, capital S, spelled capital L-I, Wen Liang, capital W-E-N-L-I-A-N-G, and also a Dr. Zhang Zhishan. That's Dr. Zhang's first name is capital Z-H-A-N-G. Her last name is capital G-I-X-I-A-N. Dr. Li Wenliang has had a lot of publicity for supposedly being a whistleblower about the virus and then having been arrested. He eventually did pass away as a result of the virus. He was not, however, a whistleblower at all. He identified the virus as SARS. He did not intend for a private WeChat group to be shared with anyone else. He was not arrested. He was, however, spoken to by the Chinese police authorities and cautioned against spreading rumors because of the possibility that that could have an incendiary social and political effect at the time of the Chinese New Year holiday. That is China's most important holiday, particularly in terms of commerce and tourism. But again, Dr. Li Wenliang was not a whistleblower. He was not arrested, and he didn't discover the virus. On the other hand, Dr. Zhang Zhishan, a woman, did discover the virus and was lauded for her discovery. Nonetheless, coverage in the U.S. of the COVID-19 phenomenon has beaten the gong about Dr. Li Wenliang being a martyr, a whistleblower, suppressed by the Chinese authorities, etc. Simply put, that is a lie. Skipping down into Joshua Cho's article. USA Today ran an op-ed on February 12th of 2020 by Republican Senator Ben Sasse, capital S-A-S-S-E, claiming that the coronavirus disaster is the deadly consequence, unquote, of Xi and the Chinese Communist Party's malfeasance and misrule, with communism being the perfect incubator for the coronavirus, unquote. Both Sasse and the Times' Nicholas Kristof claim that this is so because the Chinese government allegedly silenced whistleblowers, unquote, like Dr. Li Wenliang, which prevented him from alerting the public about the novel coronavirus. Virtually all of corporate media's false narrative of the coronavirus outbreak hinge upon the story of Li being a, quote, martyr, unquote, and, quote, whistleblower, unquote, who allegedly, quote, discovered the coronavirus, but was silenced and arrested by government officials before he could alert the public. But as several people have already documented at length, while Dr. Lee's death is tragic, he was not a whistleblower. In fact, the New York Times' own reconstruction of the crucial 7 weeks between the appearance of the first symptoms in early December and the government's decision to lock down the city on February 1st of 2020 disproves the corporate media narrative of authoritarian secrecy to maintain, quote, control, unquote, over unrest. Dr. Lee was not a virologist or an epidemiologist treating affected patients. He was an ophthalmologist who treated eye problems, which might be why he incorrectly claimed that the new virus was SARS, a related but different coronavirus. A whistleblower is someone who tries to alert the public about wrongdoing on the part of individuals or an organization. Dr. Lee did not consider himself to be a whistleblower and did not want his December 30th posting in a private WeChat group to be shared with anyone else. Neither were Dr. Lee and his colleagues, quote, arrested, unquote, as several sensationalist reports falsely claimed without issuing retractions, such as the claim the Wall Street Journal made on February 7th of 2020, quoting that. Dr. Li Wenliang was taken in by police and questioned after telling former classmates about a cluster of pneumonia cases. An earlier version of this article mistakenly said Dr. Li Wenliang had been arrested. Li was told by the police on January 3rd not to spread unverifiable rumors after a screenshot was leaked on December 31st because false information could set off unnecessary panic during the Spring Festival, that's the New Year's Festival, one of the busiest and most important holidays of the year, as at the time there had been no fatalities and no clear evidence of human-to-human transmission. And that leak, by the way, was of his December 30th WeChat post with some classmates. It was not intended to be leaked. According to the, continuing with Joshua Cho's presentation, according to the prestigious New England Journal of Medicine's timeline of January 29th of 2020, the full genomic sequence wasn't isolated and shared until January 10th, and the first fatality occurred on January 9th, with most of the fatalities occurring among older people with comorbidities, and the first confirmed case outside China was reported on January 13th. More importantly, the Red Scare coverage almost, most importantly, the Red Scare coverage above completely erased the fact that the quote whistle unquote had already been blown by Dr. Zhang Zhishan, the first doctor to report the novel coronavirus to health authorities on December 27th, which resulted in an announcement by the Chinese Center for Disease Control and the Wuhan Health Commission earlier on December 30th, parenthetically, the same day that Dr. Li Wenliang had his WeChat, private WeChat group, which was then leaked the next day, beginning again. More importantly, the Red Scare coverage above completely erased the fact that the, quote, whistle, unquote, had already been blown by Dr. Zhang Zhishan, the first doctor to report the novel coronavirus to health authorities on December 27th, which resulted in an announcement by the Chinese Center for Disease Control, or CDC, and the Wuhan Health Commission earlier on December 30th, the same day Li texted his seven colleagues. Zhang wasn't suppressed by the government, but rather commended for her efforts. And that is a signature element of Joshua Cho's rather coverage, and I think exemplifies the, frankly, willful distortion. And even if there were mistakes made, they were not retracted. That is what makes the distortion willful. that has characterized the yellow journalism peril that is with which I am characterizing the coverage of the pandemic, and beyond that, of things Chinese in general. Returning to Joshua Cho's article here, skipping down, corporate media's typical framing of Chinese government actions to combat the virus verged on parody, portraying uncontroversial moves in the most insidious terms possible. For example, instead of reporting that Hubei government officials were fired for withholding information about the coronavirus outbreak from higher ups, outlets like CNN and Business Insider claimed they were purged, unquote. Discussing volunteer efforts to assist China's effective quarantine, the New York Times, quote, to tame coronavirus, Mao-style social control blankets China, framed it as, quote, one of the biggest social control campaigns in history, unquote, and described, quote, neighborhood busybodies and uniformed volunteers, unquote, aiding the quarantine efforts as Mao-style mass crusades, unquote. Corporate media bombarded Western audiences with loaded headlines whose point was that communism was evil and the coronavirus outbreak the inevitable result of peculiar Asian attachments to authoritarianism. The Wall Street Journal ran op-eds like a communist coronavirus, unquote, and China is the real sick man of Asia, unquote, which gleefully claimed that the mighty Chinese juggernaut has been humbled by a species-hopping bat virus, unquote, and argued that the, quote, Wuhan coronavirus is a metaphor for the Communist Party of China, unquote. Another Times report, coronavirus crisis exposes cracks in China's facade of unity, played into the ludicrous, quote, imminent collapse of the Chinese government trope by claiming that the coronavirus outbreak has, quote, blown up, unquote, the facade of a gradually unifying society, and that the, quote, cracks, unquote, showing in China's veneer of stability reveal that China remains riddled with vulnerabilities that no amount of censorship or strong-arming can hide, unquote. And I would add that when we get into coverage, resume with discussion of coverage of Xinjiang province and the Uyghurs and also Tibet and other things, Hong Kong, once again, the weaponized coverage here, I think is aimed at, quote, showing cracks in China's, quote, veneer of stability, unquote, at least as it is portrayed in the U.S. Continuing. The New York Times' Nicholas Kristof argued that, quote, we are seeing the dangers of Xi's authoritarian model for China and the world, unquote, because of Xi's China systematically gutting institutions like journalism, social media, and non-governmental organizations, which are avenues typically exploited by the United States to subvert targeted governments and spread pro-American propaganda. By the way, we will be coming back to the National Endowment for Democracy, co-founded by William Casey, in this and future programs. Continuing. The New York Times of January 25th of 2020 reported that officials in Wuhan and around the country withheld critical information, played down the threat, and rebuked doctors who tried to raise the alarm, unquote, which should raise questions about weaknesses at the very heart of the Chinese system, unquote. China's rigidly hierarchical bureaucracy, unquote, and quasi-imperial system, unquote, discourage local officials from raising bad news with central bosses, unquote, as top party bosses in Beijing have little direct power over what happens in the provinces, unquote. Because the novel virus emerged in a rival state, it does not logically follow that the government should collapse or that the U.S. should therefore be more imperialist. But corporate media use these tortured syllogisms serving as mouthpieces for the U.S. government itself. Indeed, this could be something of a thesis statement for this article, reading again. But corporate media use these tortured syllogisms serving as mouthpieces for the U.S. government. Skipping down. The L.A. Times of February 16th of 2020 seemed to imply that the coronavirus epidemic was a positive development insofar as it stripped Xi Jinping's, quote, aura of invincibility in ways that no political dissident, opposition party, or revolutionary movement ever could, unquote, and because, again quoting, his inability to contain it, unquote, could lead to growing dissent and skepticism toward this, quote, form of techno-authoritarianism, unquote. The LA Times even managed to sneak in references to ancient notions of a mandate of heaven construct with Confucian thinking and forms of deeply rooted superstition, unquote, holding, again quoting, widespread sway as a potential explanation for why Chinese people might not realize that Xi and the Communist Party do not have the support of mysterious forces in heaven, unquote. A less racist and propagandistic explanation for why more Chinese people aren't rebelling against the Chinese government would be the fact that alongside its repressive institutions, it has continually raised their standards of living, an accomplishment reflected in the high levels of public trust expressed in surveys. As Michael Parenti noted in Against Empire, corporate media demonized the leaders of official enemy states as an evil personification of the entire population, who is then used to justify U.S. hostility against them. This is readily apparent in corporate media's predominant framing of the coronavirus as a problem for Xi Jinping or the Communist Party, as expressed in the New York Times of January 26th, the Time Magazine of February 6th, the Wall Street Journal of February 7th, Foreign Policy Magazine of February 10th, and Foreign Affairs Magazine of February 10th, all of 2020. Again, this is readily apparent in corporate media's predominant framing of the coronavirus as a problem for Xi Jinping or the Communist Party rather than for the Chinese people and those suffering from the virus abroad, or as a problem for the international community to solve cooperatively with China. CNN of February 11th of 2020 criticized Xi's visit to treatment centers as a stage-managed outing, unquote, scorning the president for never being at risk of any infection, quote, and refusing to place himself in a situation where his health was under threat, unquote, based solely on the kind of face mask he was using. Parenthetically, he won't be saying that about Donald Trump, who doesn't wear a mask. Continuing. Apparently, the proper way for a foreign head of state to seriously deal with an epidemic is to contract and overcome the disease themselves at the risk of their own life. Well, maybe that's why Donald Trump is doing it. You know, and heck, don't wear a mask and just quaff a little disinfectant. That'll take care of it. Continuing. The New York Times, coronavirus outbreak risks reviving stigma for China, offered plausible deniability for claiming that, quote, old stereotypes of China being a source of contagion are unfounded and outdated before subtly playing into the racist trope of dirty Asians by retaining claims that, quote, China's recent history of what are known as zoonotic infections, unquote, raise, again quoting, questions about public health practices in the world's most populous country, unquote, because, again, quoting, China remains somewhat of a laboratory itself, unquote. According to the RAND Corporation's Dr. Jennifer Wang Bowie, quote, there is quite a fair amount of epidemics originating in China or passing through China, unquote, she said. Two of the devastating flu pandemics of the 20th century, the Asian flu of 1957 and the Hong Kong flu of 1968, both originated in China and left a trail of about 3 million deaths worldwide. By the way, Hong Kong was not really a part of China at that point. It was an independent principality. However, continuing, now it is part of China, that is. International authorities and leading medical professionals do not share U.S. corporate media's negative assessment. U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres praised China's efforts to contain the epidemic as remarkable, unquote, and warned against stigmatizing the country. The World Health Organization, or WHO, has repeatedly lauded China's remarkable transparency and mobilization of resources despite corporate media flack, and declared China to be setting a, quote, new standard, unquote, for its unprecedented response, unquote, and has criticized what it called an infodemic of overabundant and false information, unquote. The Lancet of January 24th of 2020, a leading British medical journal, shared this positive assessment of China's efforts, praising the World Health Organization for not bowing to the, quote, pressure, unquote, of massive attention and conjecture, unquote, to declare a public health emergency of international concern, quote, until necessary, unquote. It published an open letter expressing solidarity with Chinese officials and health professionals combating the disease. Journalist Patrick Colburn in The Independent of January 24th of 2020 observed that the need to blame somebody, the spread of misinformation and suspicion of assurances provided by authorities are common features of epidemics because it is difficult for governments to convey a sense of calm and emergency at the same time. Corporate media provide relentless reports on new outbreak and mortality figures without providing comparisons to other common diseases and previous epidemics with headlines like The Washington Post, South Korea coronavirus cases surge as Italy confirms first death from the coronavirus on February 21st of 2020, and The New York Times, death in China surpassed toll from SARS on February 9th of 2020, and USA Today's death toll from coronavirus surpasses 1,100. U.S. confirms 13th case on February 19th. Virtually all of these kinds of reports include comparisons with previous epidemics surfacing in China, like SARS, but scrupulously avoid making comparisons with more familiar and devastating diseases like influenza and epidemics originating in the U.S., like the H1N1 swine flu. And I would add parenthetically, neither Joshua Cho nor anyone else that I'm aware of, with the exception of that Whitney Webb article, have looked at the information that suggests that, in fact, the virus was made in the laboratory, but that the whip hand is not Chinese, but American. Skipping down in this article, liberal outlets like the New York Times of February 27th of 2020 raised alarms about U.S. authoritarianism, unquote, when it reported on the Trump administration's censorship of leading scientists warning about coronavirus like it previously has on climate change in order to, quote, tighten control of coronavirus messaging by government health officials and scientists, unquote, and having them coordinate all statements and public appearance with the office of Vice President Mike Pence, unquote. U.S. media hysteria is especially hypocritical, as virtually all of these reports condemning China's response omit criticisms of U.S. preparedness for epidemics, which is far worse, and the Trump administration previously firing the U.S. government's pandemic response chain of command while cutting funding for disease prevention programs. However, this threat of inflation and opportunistic fear-mongering toward official enemies is par for the course for corporate media. Oxford's Our World in Data project found huge discrepancies between what Americans actually die from, cancer and heart disease, and what media reports emphasize as the cause of U.S. deaths, homicide, and terrorism. Perhaps this sensationalist yellow peril and red scare coverage over the coronavirus are the result of the U.S. government seeing China itself and its challenging socialist system as viruses that need to be contained, unquote. And we're going to continue now the coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic. And bear in mind that that Joshua Chill article was published on March 6th of 2020, so it was early on in the American experience with the virus. Any discussion of the virus being man-made omits the sinister information that was presented in that Whitney Webb article and focuses on the allegation that, yep, the Chinese manufactured it or it escaped from a Chinese laboratory. Characteristic of the sources for that kind of misinformation was presented in a Gray Zone article of April 20th of 2020 by Max Blumenthal and Ajit Singh, A-J-I-T, S-I-M-V-H, How a Trump Media Dump Mainstream Chinese Lab Coronavirus Conspiracy Theory. Now, I would note that in this article, they dismiss any notion that the virus was made in a laboratory and cite that fallacious Nature magazine article that we have scored in the past. They do, however, take note of a Washington Post journalist named Josh, J-O-S-H, Rogan, R-O-G-I-N, and he has spread the virus came from a Chinese laboratory. His source is a longtime anti-Chinese figure named Zhao Qiang. I'm probably mispronouncing that. That's capital X-I-A-O, capital Q-I-A-N-G. Not only is Zhao Qiang a longtime anti-Chinese government activist, but he has been financed again by the National Endowment for Democracy. That was co-founded by William Casey. And as we get into the yellow journalism peril, you will find that many of the intelligence fronts that are at the epicenter of the yellow journalism peril, such as the MED, were founded by William Casey. And that is one of the main reasons I went into that long series about the development, not only of the U.S. intelligence system, but the co-development of the Republican Party and the roles of people like William Casey and Resorts International and Capital Cities Incorporated in the evolution of what I call the underground right, and their inseparability from both the Republican Party and the CIA, which, as discussed in that brilliant Peter Dale Scott article, was founded in many ways to provide a landing place for the Galen organization and the SS cadres that were folded into it. Now, again, from this article from the Gray Zone, How a Trump Media Dump Mainstream Chinese Lab Coronavirus Conspiracy Theory by Max Blumenthal and Ajit Singh from the Gray Zone of April 20th. Josh Rogan's faux scientist, unquote, is a U.S. government-backed regime change activist. Instead of discussing issues surrounding WIV with scientific experts at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which not only has a long-standing relationship with the U.S. Army Medical Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick, but which also was involved with a joint Chinese and American program in which the American financing came from organizations which have fronted for U.S. intel in the past, such as USAID, and some of the gain-of-function manipulations of bat-borne coronaviruses were accomplished in the U.S. under those programs by people like Dr. Ralph Barish of the University of North Carolina. More about that as we review that in future programs. One more time. Instead of discussing issues surrounding the Wuhan Institute of Virology with scientific experts, Rogan attempted to bolster his claims by relying on the speculation of anonymous Trump administration officials and Zhao Qiang, an anti-Chinese government activist with a long history of U.S. government funding. Rogan referred to Zhao merely as, quote, a research scientist, unquote, dishonestly attempting to furnish academic credibility for the professional political dissident. In fact, Zhao has no expertise in any science and teaches classes on, quote, digital activism, unquote, internet freedom, unquote, and blogging China, unquote. Revealingly, Rogan completely omitted the real record of Zhao Qiang as an anti-Chinese government activist. For over 20 years, Zhao has worked with and been funded by the National Endowment for Democracy, or NED, the main arm of U.S. government regime change efforts in countries targeted by Washington. The NED has funded and trained right-wing opposition movements from Venezuela to Nicaragua to Hong Kong, where violent separatist elements spent much of 2019 agitating for an end to Chinese rule. Zhao served as the executive director of the New York-based non-governmental organization Human Rights in China from 1991 to 2002. As a longtime grantee of the NED, he served as vice chairman of the steering committee of the World Movement for Democracy, an international network of networks, unquote, founded by the National Endowment for Democracy, and, quote, for which the NED serves as the secretariat, unquote. Zhao is also the editor-in-chief of China Digital Times, a publication that he founded in 2003 and that is also funded by the NED. Again, co-founded by William Casey. Another article that goes into the yellow journalism peril and talks about intimations made on Fox News by a quote ex-unquote CIA official that in fact the Democratic Party leadership may very well be agents of the Chinese intelligence service MSS. While this is in and of itself not all that surprising, we've got Trump talking about Beijing, Biden, and so forth, it is also characteristic of McCarthy-style red-baiting. Anyone who didn't go along with Joe McCarthy was intimated as being a communist agent during that period. Bear in mind that Joe McCarthy's right-hand man and chief counsel was Roy Cohn, who was the chief counsel for and political mentor for Donald Trump. Nonetheless, having Fox News, which is has a huge following, intimating that the Democratic Party leadership are agents of Chinese intelligence, well, it speaks for itself, and it is also a very dangerous precedent. The following is by Caitlin Johnstone, J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N-E, and featured in Consortium News of April 21st of 2020. COVID-19, MSM anti-China hysteria gets way crazier and dumber. MSM, of course, mainstream media. Skipping down. Fox News' Jeanine Pirro, P-I-R-R-O, aired a fire and brimstone monologue on China that looks like a fictional news clip from some kind of film noir-style movie adaptation of a really ham-fisted dystopian graphic novel. It really needs to be seen to be believed, so give it a view here when you get a chance. Quote, China is the one that, by the way, the link is in the article here. China is the one that's out of control, unquote, Pirro spat, punching the word China like she was speaking a profanity at someone she despises. Quote, we are not going to let you destroy this country or our way of life. We have fought too hard, and we've fought too long to lose it to a Wuhan, that's what I said, a Wuhan virus, unquote. Apparently this was in April, and the U.S. has by far and away the highest rate of infection, the highest number of infections, and the highest number of deaths in the world, despite the fact that we are quite far down on the scale of population. Continuing, and with more of Jeanine Pirro's monologue. You want to control people? You politicians want to flex your muscles, unquote, Pirro asked, referring to government lockdowns. Quote, we'll start working on how you're going to punish, ostracize, alienate, and financially sanction, and make China accountable for what they did to us and the rest of the world. Unquote. It is a legitimately scary segment with an unbelievable amount of vitriol, and Pirro isn't the only Fox News pundit ramping up the anti-China hysteria. Tucker Carlson recently had on, quote, former, unquote, CIA officer Brian Dean Wright, capital W-R-I-G-H-T, to tell his massive audience about the danger posed by the Chinese menace, and pitched him a question clearly geared to set up Wright to claim without evidence that leaders of the Democratic Party may, in fact, be members of the Chinese intelligence agency, MSS. Quote, we reached out to Senator Feinstein and a number of other elected officials today and asked, quote, have you had contact recently since the outbreak with Chinese officials, unquote? And not a single one responded. What do you think we should infer from that? Asked Carlson, who is known to have himself tried to join the CIA in the past. I think that they're nervous, Wright replied. I think there are a bunch of people who, because they are either useful idiots or they have some degree of knowledge and relationships behind the scenes with the Chinese government. Some of them, in fact, could be Chinese agents of the MSS, their intelligence service. God forbid. They're nervous, unquote. We've got a lot of very nervous folks in the Democratic Party, unquote, Wright added. This is easily as unhinged as even the most cartoonishly ridiculous Russian hysteria we've seen uncorked by Rachel Maddow or anyone on MSNBC, and is not at all different in tone or content. Even the use of the term useful idiots, unquote, is right in line with the same reprehensible Russiagate rhetoric we have been hearing for the last 4 years. The claim that rival parties have been infiltrated by communists has a very long and ugly history in U.S. politics, and now that it is being weaponized by the American right wing in such a shameless way, we can expect it to get a whole lot uglier. Well, yes, indeed. We are going to shift now from coverage, I should say, of the virus and how China handled it and so forth, to Xinjiang province, the Uyghurs, Tibet, and related issues. And once again, the yellow journalism peril and the weaponization of media coverage of these things is front and center. And really, when we have organizations like the aforementioned National Endowment for Democracy, co-founded by William Casey, one of the principal people involved with generating the Nazi branch of the Republican Party, and one of the people lobbying for the creation of the CIA way back in the immediate post-war period as a vehicle for the Galen organization and the SS cadres attached to that. The National Endowment for Democracy is once again very active vis-a-vis the Uyghurs, and the media have been lapping up coverage from people like Adrian Zenz. We talked about Adrian Zenz in For the Record 1143 and 1144. Zenz is a German. He is an end times Christian. He also comes to his, quote, expertise, unquote, vis-a-vis Xinjiang province and the Uyghurs, courtesy of his position as a fellow with the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. That is a direct offshoot of the Captive Nations Committee, the OUNB, Ukrainian Fascist Organization, and the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, a key element of the former World Anti-Communist League that got its start in 1943 under Adolf Hitler as the Committee of Subjugated Nations. Zenz has based his coverage of the Uyghurs on a single radio broadcast from Istiklal TV. That is a Uyghur exile media organization from Turkey. And reading from an article that we used in For the Record 1143, once again from The Gray Zone by Max Blumenthal and Ajit Singh, China detaining millions of Uyghurs, serious problems with claims by U.S.-backed NGO and far-right researcher led by God, unquote, against Beijing. This from December 21st of 2019. The main source for Adrian Zenz's claims. Zenz arrived at his estimate of over 1 million in a dubious manner. He based it on a single report by Istiklal TV, a Uyghur exile media organization based in Turkey. Far from an impartial journalistic organization, Istiklal TV advances the separatist cause while playing host to an assortment of extremist figures. One such character who often appears on Istiklal TV is Abdulkadir Yapuquan, Yapuquan, a reported leader of the East Turkestan Islamic Movement, a separatist group that aims to establish an independent homeland in Xinjiang called East Turkestan. ETIM has been designated as a terrorist organization with ties to Al-Qaeda by the U.S., the European Union, and the UN Security Council's Al-Qaeda Sanctions Committee. The Associated Press has reported that, quote, since 2013, thousands of Uyghurs had traveled to Syria to train with the Uyghur militant group Turkestan Islamic Party and to fight alongside Al-Qaeda, with several hundred joining the Islamic State. Another major source for the allegation that millions of Uyghurs are being detained by China is the Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders. That also is a U.S. intelligence front founded in the early 80s when the aforementioned William Casey was head of the CIA. And they based their 2018 report on interviews with a total of 8 individuals, this out of a total Uyghur population of Xinjiang province of 20 million. I would note in passing that a college student in the social sciences who was doing a report on mass detention of Uyghurs in Xinjiang province and used two sources, one of which was based on interviews with eight individuals and another from a single broadcast on Istiklal TV by a guy who is not only a pan-Turkist based in Turkey, but heads an organization that is affiliated with Al-Qaeda and ISIS. If you had a really charitable professor, you would get a C-. More than likely, you would get a D. This is simply put, very bad methodology. Nonetheless, Adrian Zenz, and I would note that his ABN and Pravi Sector and Azov Battalion associated elements in Ukraine had decamped to Hong Kong, and as we have looked at, in For the Record 1143 and 1144, had exerted their influence on the Hong Kong movement, the Hong Kong, quote, pro-democracy, unquote, movement. And one of the mainstream media's go-to people, Joshua Wong. And as the yellow journalism peril gains momentum, we've seen them attacking, of all things, the movie Mulan. That is a recent Walt Disney release. It is an action film remake of a full-length feature animated cartoon from the movie from the late 1990s, because some of it was filmed in Xinjiang province with the cooperation of the authorities there, who were credited, as they generally are at the end of a movie. The movie has come under fire. And guess who is being cited as credible sources by those calling for the boycott? From the New York Times of March 9th, from the New York Times of September 9th of 2020, an article by Amy Kim, QIM, and Edward Wong, calls Globe to boycott Mulan, unquote, over China's treatment of Uyghur Muslims. Reads in part, the area surrounding Turpan, T-U-R-P-A-N, known for its rugged landscapes, is the site of a number of detention camps. That includes the earliest documented case of what China has called transformation through education, unquote, targeting Muslims from August 2013, said Adrian Zenz, a researcher at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation in Washington, who has studied Chinese policies toward the Uyghurs. Skipping down. On Monday, calls to boycott Mulan began growing on social media. Among the critics was Joshua Wong, a prominent Hong Kong pro-democracy activist who accused Disney of bowing to pressure from Beijing. And Joshua Wong is an individual, again, who has manifested influence of some of the ABN and Pravi Sector-linked elements that had decamped to Hong Kong, as we looked at in For the Record programs 1143 and 1144. Adrian Zenz, again, a German and end times Christian who comes to his expertise, unquote, vis-a-vis Xinjiang and the Uyghurs from his position at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, a direct offshoot of the Captive Nations Committee, the ABN, and the OUNB. He also is now emerging as not only an anthropologist, but an expert on Tibet. An article from The Guardian of the UK from October 22nd of 2020. Report charts China's mass expansion of labor program in Tibet by Helen Davidson and agencies. It doesn't say what agencies those are. I think we can take a guess. That article reads in part, and by the way, Adrian Zenz is moving up in the world. Chinese authorities are dramatically expanding a mass labor program in Tibet, which analysts have compared to alleged forced labor operations in Xinjiang, according to evidence compiled by a German anthropologist and corroborated by Reuters. Who is that German anthropologist? Trema has set quotas to move hundreds of thousands of Tibetan rural laborers off their land and into, quote, military-style, unquote, facilities to train them as factory workers, according to documents analyzed by researcher Adrian Zenz for the Jamestown Foundation, a U.S. research institute. That you can tell that Adrian Zenz is an end times Christian, because for him, the rapture has already arrived. He is being elevated directly to the heavens, as he's basically a shill and a Nazi fellow traveler, a shill for organizations like the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Again, a direct offshoot of the Captive Nations Committee, the ABN, the OUNB. Now he is an anthropologist. He is moving up, elevated to the very heavens, it would appear here. And I would note that now he is an expert on expanding mass labor programs in Tibet. We have looked at Tibet in various programs, including, for the record, 547, and we came back to it in our discussions with Peter Lavenda, the author of the consummately important book, The Hitler Legacy. Tibet has been a focal point of Nazi research and activity since the Third Reich period, because the Tibetans were seen as the possible ancestors of the, quote, Aryan race, unquote, because of their high cheekbones. In fact, the SS sent an anthropological expedition to Tibet under a guy named Bruno Beger, B-E-G-E-R. He, in turn, was a Nazi war criminal. He was responsible, after he returned from Tibet, for the mass execution of 120 or 130 some odd Soviet prisoners of war, whom he had killed with cyanide spray so that their skeletons could be preserved in a museum for anthropological study. Nonetheless, he remained a close associate of the Dalai Lama and was an actual member of the Tibetan government in exile as late as the 1990s. Again, the fact that he had 120 or 130 some odd Soviet prisoners killed so their skeletons could be preserved in a museum apparently does not bother the Dalai Lama. As we looked at in our series, Heinrich Harrer, H-A-R-R-E-R, who was the Dalai Lama's tutor, was himself SS. And Tibetan government in exile and the Dalai Lama's movements have been subsidized by CIA for a long time, as we look at in, for the record, 548. We will continue with our discussion of the yellow journalism peril in our next program. However, we are all out of time here. So this concludes, for the record, program number 1153. BioPsyop Apocalypse Now, Part 13. The Yellow Journalism Peril, Part 1, being recorded on September 27th of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.